Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Authentic You Radio. And, of course, I don't have my jingle yet, so I was kind of taken off guard there for a second. I'm usually used to my jingle playing, but I forgot that I didn't have one. So welcome, everyone. Welcome to the second edition of Authentic You Radio. And tonight we have special guest Dr. David Fox. Dr. Fox is a specialist in maternal fetal medicine, expert in personal growth and development, master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming, experienced meditator, award-winning teacher, hypnotist, black belt in Taekwondo, avid cooker, and marathon runner. Wow, that's quite an impressive resume. Let's welcome David to the show.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
Welcome, David. So, yeah, that's quite an impressive resume. I mean, you've really done a lot in your life. Wow, I mean, that's more than anyone I know, I think.
Well, I have a lot of interests. I always have. And I tend to pursue them pretty intensely when I do have them. They're not all things that I do concurrently. Sometimes I'll work on something, and then I'll move on to something else, and then I'll go back to it maybe or maybe not. So I just I try to practice what I preach, which is to follow my dreams.
Well, you're definitely in the right spot, because we want people on the show to be inspirational, and you're definitely that for sure. So tell me a little bit about your background. You're a doctor, but you've since switched over. I mean, you're still a doctor, but you're writing a spiritual book now. But tell us a little bit about your background as a doctor and why you chose that field initially.
Well, I am a specialist in maternal fetal medicine, which means that I take care of pregnant women who have high-risk pregnancies or who have complications of pregnancy or who might have problems with their pregnancies. Actually, initially, I went into internal medicine, and then I realized that I liked obstetrics preferably. And then after I did my OBGYN training, I decided to do the medicine aspect of OBGYN, which is maternal fetal medicine. So it's kind of a combination of medicine and obstetrics, and I like challenges, and what I do every day has lots and lots of challenges, and that's why I chose the field. I enjoy taking care of pregnant women. I enjoy interacting with women in general, and that's why I chose my field.
Well, you know, I always love meeting, I've met a couple in my past, and I've seen a couple specialists myself during my pregnancies, and it always fascinates me to, ask the question, why a man would want to take care of pregnant women. And it seems to be your assumption of why they want to get into this field is completely off, and they have this beautiful maternal quality about them themselves. They're very in tune with their own feminine side as well as their masculine side, and I can really feel that with you, that you really have this equilibrium about you, that you're very balance. So I always find that, I saw a couple specialists similar to you in my time, and it always seems to be the case. So it's nice to hear. It's nice to hear.
Well, thank you.
From, you're welcome. So
I think we all have, go ahead. I think we all have masculine as well as feminine qualities. And I noticed even growing up that most of my friends were women, or girls, actually, when I was a kid. And as I grew up, and even when I went to college, most of my friends were women. And I like to nurture my masculine qualities, but the feminine qualities as well. And I think we all have both of them. I think that may be what you're alluding to.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. And it oozes from you, and it's this balance and this equilibrium, and it's beautiful, because how many men do we meet that are these macho people that are really afraid to get in touch with their other side? And, they seem off. And so for you, I can just feel that you're very balanced on both sides, and it makes for a complete person. So it's no surprise that you're writing spiritual books now, because, you just have that ability to go to both sides, and especially spirituality. I mean, that really is a feminine quality. I mean, I think it's much more feminine than it is masculine.
To be a to write spiritually.
Yeah, I do think that. I think that, people allude to the fact that spirit has a more feminine, because intuition, for example, women have you know, they always say that women have that women's intuition, for example. So there is, you know, you need both sides. I mean, you wouldn't get a macho construction worker writing spiritual books, you know, because they're not in touch with that emotional, intuitive side. So, yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, I'm not trying to pull hairs here, but that's really what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, and I concur with that. And just as there are very masculine men who wouldn't write a book like this, there are probably also women that wouldn't write a book like this. So really, as you say, there's a balance there, and either gender can get in touch with that aspect of themselves. But I agree that it does tend to be more of a quality generally manifested through women. So I definitely agree with you on that.
Great. So your other interests, I guess you could say, how did they come about? I mean, I've heard a little bit about the NLP, and, you know, I've done meditation myself, and, you know, I've heard about hypnotism and things like that, but can you tell us a little bit about those areas?
Yes. NLP is very, very difficult to define, really. It's a lot of different things. If you've heard of Tony Robbins, the very well-known motivational speaker, a lot of what he does has its roots in NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming, and basically what that is it's a system developed by two men, Richard Bandler and John Grinder, and they studied individuals who were experts in their fields, generally in psychology and personal growth and even family therapy, and hypnotism. They studied Milton Erickson, one of the greatest hypnotists of the 20th century, and they basically modeled and unpacked the structure of how these people were helping other individuals, and they basically teach courses on how to communicate better, how to help people with personal change, how to, and it involves language skills, it involves hypnosis, it involves certain types of techniques that can be done, for example, to cure phobias very quickly. And it's a fascinating, fascinating field that really encompasses lots of different techniques. As far as the hypnosis, I was always interested in that as a kid. I got more interested in it through NLP, and then I started taking medical hypnosis training through an organization called ASH, which is psychologists and physicians who apply hypnosis to medical aspects. So I got training in that, and I actually use it somewhat in my practice. And so that's really comes mostly from personal interest and a desire to help people in any way that I can.
Wow, so you do use these tools in your practice, because I know here in Canada, it's, you know, the medical field in general is still very scientific-based, and they really don't openly accept any kind of taboo, I guess, you know, healing modality. So you use hypnotism in your practice.
Well, I use some hypnosis and I use some NLP techniques. And I don't look at it as an either or. I look at it as an and, so that you can use conventional medicine in an evidence-based manner as best you can. And then there are places where alternative medicines, using the power of the mind, have roles and applications, and it's important to be careful, because there are a lot of non-medical and a lot of alternative things that haven't really been proven to work, or maybe they do, maybe they don't. Hopefully they're safe. But I've used several different alternative types of treatments in the context of things like nausea and vomiting of pregnancy. I've had some real successes with that. I've had women who have intense needle phobias when they want a fetal diagnosis procedure, but they're too afraid of having it. And I've had women with longstanding needle phobias that have been able to have their procedures done after a 10 or 20 minute, sometimes 30 minute session of a mental technique that I've learned through NLP. And there are other instances as well. For example, helping people who have migraine headaches, whose medications are not giving them complete relief. I've had very, very good success helping women who are having headaches. So there are a lot of different applications for alternative treatments. And they don't necessarily have to replace conventional treatments. They can actually complement them.
I agree. You know, I wish that they would, you know, be more open here in Canada to those kinds of things because we could so benefit from it. And I think, you know, most recently here in Canada, they've started to integrate some healing, hands-on healing. And I can't remember the name right off the top of my head, but they have started doing that in hospitals, but it's very limited and, you know, they're very cautious about where they use it. So, yeah, I guess we're starting to break through. But I certainly would have liked to have had you as a doctor during my pregnancies, that's for sure. I mean, the hypnosis for morning sickness, that would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so why the switch from being, your, you know, the mainstream doctor with a little bit of, you know, doing more non-traditional healing modalities to spiritual author? How did this come about? And can you tell us a little bit about the journey towards writing this book?
Yes, I will. My journey toward writing this book actually began decades ago. As I say in the introduction of my book, you know, I was blessed with lots and lots of gifts and God-given talents, but I was not one of those people who was born with what I call the happy gene. And I had an instance of depression when I was an adolescent, and it was very, very difficult for me to climb out of that. And once I did climb out of that, then I was able to stay out of that and have actually a very good, productive, for lack of a better word, a very happy life for years until I had another bout of difficulties several years later. And then it happened again a third time many, many years later. So I've had some personal struggles that I think have made me more sensitive to the personal struggles of others. And I have a very good memory and an intense desire to help other people with the things that I have learned through over years and years of having to deal with my own issues. And it is a very big part of my life's purpose to share what I've learned with others to help them through difficult times, or even if they're not having difficult times, if they just want to be happier than they currently are. There's a lot of things that I've learned that I've wanted to share. And it's a very big part of my life's purpose to help enhance the quality of other people's lives. And that really was the impetus for writing this book. I had a very deep spiritual inspiration and desire to help other people. And that is really the bottom line of why I wrote this book and why I would write any future books.
So really it developed over these years of, you know, the series of depressive episodes that really, and, you know, I find that so many people who write spiritual books and they go on to affect people on a spiritual level, they always seem to have early struggles, or they tend to have lives that it kind of seems like life's dealt you a bum deal kind of thing, right? And then it's almost like boot camp. And then when we come out of it, it's time to share the message that we've learned from it. Because I don't know if I can think of anyone who's written a book that's had an easy life. You know, most of them have some sort of story to share that has led to, you know, the blossoming of the book.
I think that's a very, very, very good observation. I agree with that so much. I mean, I was just having a conversation with my wife who I would say was born sort of with the right brain chemistry, where she really doesn't have a whole lot of struggles or never really has had a whole lot of struggles in that department. And not only would she not write a book like this, I don't think she would ever pick up a book like this. I don't think she has an interest in that genre because it doesn't really cross her mind, because things kind of come naturally to her. There are a lot of people who have very fortunate situations like her who still would benefit from a book like this, because no one is immune. No one is immune to having struggles in life. I don't know too many people, if any, who don't have some struggles and couldn't use some support. So even if you are starting out as a pretty content person, you can still have struggles that are not necessarily self-imposed, and you can benefit from coping skills that are introduced in this book, as well as other spiritual guides.
I agree. You know, I think that we all, you know, the people who go on to write these books that affect the world, and, yeah, you know, we always need to have that rock in our lives, and I think your wife is kind of that rock for you. You know, she's balanced, and she's, you know, doesn't really need to read this kind of book per se, but she can benefit from it, and I think she's, you know, she serves as your grounding rock so that you can go out and spread your message to the world, and I always find that, you know, my husband is like that for me. He's very much my rock.
Yeah, I would agree. I would definitely agree. You know, my wife and I have 6 children. And
wow.
Even though she is this rock, and even though she is this emotionally balanced person, it's hard. It's hard having 6 kids. And it's hard having 6 kids if one or two of them are having difficulties of any kind. And just the everyday struggles and challenges of life, it's hard work. No matter how wonderful it is, no matter how joyful it is, it's work. And things come up that have to change your day. Things come up that change your life. Things that that you can't predict. And so, again, no matter how endowed you are from birth, there are always ways to enhance your life to make it even better. And that was really the message of this book, was wherever you're starting from, whether it's starting from a place of adversity or whether it's not, there are always things you can do to enhance the quality of your life. And that's an important message that I wanted to get out about the book.
Okay, well, I guess we haven't even mentioned the book, and I apologize for that. I kind of slipped over that. So the book itself is, let me see, Comfort, Healing, and Joy, Secrets to Living a Magnificent Life. And I love that title. How did you come up with this title?
Well, that is an excellent, excellent question. And here's what happened. Last year, I don't want to say it's a divine inspiration, although it probably was, but I had this very powerful urge to start writing every day, almost every day. And it became something that I was almost felt called to do. And I didn't have a sense of what the title would be, and I didn't have a sense of what the theme necessarily would be. I just started writing. Writing and writing and writing. Sometimes I would write one chapter a day. Sometimes I would write 3. Sometimes I would write none for a week. And when I got done with all the things that I had, when I sort of got it out, then I sat on my bed, literally, and I looked at all the themes, and I asked myself, what are the threads? What are the threads that weave these chapters together? And I came up with 3 themes. Theme number 1 was comfort, which is how to help people soothe themselves, how to help people feel better about themselves in the here and now. The second theme was healing, how to remove the barriers that we have toward achieving our fullest potential. And the third theme was sort of a positive theme, or a positive psychology theme, was how do we experience more joy? How do we, once we've removed barriers, once we've gotten over a lot of our adversities, what can we do to actually improve the quality of our lives besides just removing the negative things? What can we do that's actually positive? And so I organized these, and it just so happens that the chapters essentially worked about one-third, one-third, one-third. There's some chapters that you could actually put in different sections if you wanted to, but it was actually a very easy, it almost organized itself when I started looking at the 3 themes that each chapter was a part of. And that's why I named it Comfort, Healing, and Joy, because each chapter refers to one of those 3 themes.
Wow, don't you just love that? I mean, that's just an amazing story. And, you know, it's such an example of divine inspiration, and, you know, it's like a download. It's like you were given this book, and you were meant to write it. And, oh, it's just amazing. I love hearing stories like this. It's so inspirational.
Well, the way I kind of describe it is, and I think I even said this in the introduction, is, in a way, this book kind of wrote itself. And that's a very hard concept to explain to somebody, but it really did. I feel like I was just an instrument or a vehicle for writing this book, but I feel like this, from a creativity standpoint, this book wrote itself. I don't know how else to explain it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, you were really almost like the vehicle for the transmission, so to speak.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about the book? I mean, I know you told us a little bit about each section and what they represent, but what can people who read your book expect to take away from it?
Okay, well, that's a great question, and I'll give you the answer. The answer to that question is that every chapter, first of all, there are several chapters in each section, and they're not very long chapters. They range from one page to maybe five pages. And each chapter begins with either a metaphor or a story that segues into the main purpose of the chapter, followed by practical steps the reader can take to implement the particular idea of the chapter. For example, one of the things that's been very powerful in my life has been meditation. And so I have a chapter in the comfort section on meditation, but because I don't want to limit the reader to my form of meditation, I want to just introduce the reader to the concept of meditation, whether it's a mantra meditation or a mindfulness meditation or whether it's physical like yoga. It's important from a self-care standpoint to implement some sort of practice that enhances well-being. And so one of the chapters has to do with meditation, but it's very important for me throughout the book not to restrict the reader into any particular worldview or mindset or religious view, and to be very, very generic and very open and flexible for the reader to take whatever it is that they want. And not every reader will necessarily resonate with every chapter. And as I say at the beginning of the book, if the reader finds one pearl of wisdom that improves their life in any one of these chapters, then it was worth the entire book. But I believe that most people will find that there are several things in different chapters that will resonate with them. And that's kind of my answer to that. There are some cognitive types of techniques, things that come from cognitive psychology, things that come from positive psychology. My favorite chapter of all, would you like to hear my favorite chapter?
Sure.
My favorite chapter is in the healing section. It's called Sift Through the Pain to Find Some Meaning. And it basically gives the reader a very spiritually comforting message on how to transcend adversity that people experience through no fault of their own. And I'm talking about terrible, terrible things that happen to people that they didn't create or ask for, but what do we do with it? How do we deal with it? How do we transcend it if we can't change it? And to me, that chapter is the most important and most powerful in the book.
I agree. Wow. I mean, I don't think I've read a book that has covered this topic before, and yet so many people would need this information. Almost everyone that would pick up a book like yours would be one of their, you know, I guess top 10 things that they would be reading spiritual books for, I would think.
Well, and if that chapter was the only chapter that they read and they got something out of it, then to me, that accomplishes the mission of writing the book. Because again, I don't think any author can be all things to all people. But if you can be one thing or two things or three things to anybody who reads your book, then I think you can say that you've been successful. And that's really what one of my goals was.
Fantastic. So can you give us a little sneak peek as to what you mean about, you know, sifting through the pain to, you know, find meaning in it? Can you give us an example?
okay. People experience terrible tragedies, violence, death, disability, disease, and the ability to transcend these things doesn't necessarily happen overnight. The book, that chapter starts out with a story written by a friend of mine, a close friend of mine, who talks about her 12-year-old son who was just a normal pregnancy up until the end. And then as it turned out, the child ultimately was found to be mentally severely disabled, is now 12 years old and is mentally the age of a 3-year-old. He does not speak. He does not sleep well. He has very disruptive behavior. He self-stimulates like a child with autistic features. And it's, for a lot of people, it would be a parent's worst nightmare. How do you deal with that? How do you cope with that? And
yeah.
The purpose of this chapter is not to neutralize that and to convince the person that what they're going through is not hard. The chapter is about how to take what you've experienced and find the blessing that resides within that experience, not because you asked for it and not because you're trying to paint a pretty picture and not because you wanted it and not because anything about it is good, but how can we turn it? What are the blessings? Who came into our lives because of this experience? How did this make us a better person? What are we doing, or what have other people done who've gone through periods like this to make the world a better place? Think about John Walsh, whose son was murdered, and he starts the show, America, you know, America's Most Wanted, where he finds all these missing children. He wouldn't do anything to have his child back, but in lieu of being able to do that, he's helped save so many other children from a similar fate. And so he still was able to find meaning in this horrible, horrible tragedy that happened to him and his family. And that really, to me, is a powerful message that that needs to be read.
You know, I just had a kind of an aha moment while you were talking about this because, yeah, you know, you just said that, you know, John Walsh went on to do something that represented that he found meaning from his son's death. And, you know, for me, this whole authentic journey that I've been on lately is really about that, finding meaning in the painful things that have gone on in my life. For example, the lady you'd mentioned with the severely mentally challenged child. I mean, my child isn't that severe, but she has, you know, ADHD tendencies, and a pediatrician wanted to label her as high-functioning autistic, which I didn't accept those labels, and I allowed her to be her and be authentic. And in the beginning, when we were talking before the show, I'd mentioned the man I had met, you know, the choreographer, and he's also ADD, but he's a crayon artist. And when I met him, I had this profoundly transformational experience because it was like I was meeting my daughter in a, you know, a male form, but grown up. And it was like, wow, you know, I know that she's going to be okay. And I know that, you know, she wasn't given to me just to cause me, you know, great pain and sorrow and difficulty and all those things. It was meant for me to see that it's okay for her to be her and to be authentic. And, you know, it was just this beautiful experience that I had, and it was so healing. And it was just that I was sifting through all of those experiences and kind of having like a life review all at once, and it was amazing. It really was.
Yeah, and that's that. Absolutely agree. And the thing is, Michelle, it doesn't always happen right away. It might take a while. It might take time to reach that place. And so the chapter, the book, your experience, I don't expect people to read a chapter and say, okay, I'm transcended. This is something that's a process. And this process can take a period of time that may be longer than what we're hoping for. But eventually, we have to have hope and faith that through time and through searching, that we will reach that place.
Yes, I agree. So I really like the fact that you have practical steps in the book, because – there are so many books out there that you read it and, you take in the information, but then you're kind of left still wondering, okay, how do I apply this? How do I make it work for me? And, I had a conversation actually with another author who has, she was on my show a while back and she's since become a good friend of mine. And she has 10 books herself, so she kind of knows her stuff. And she was mentioning that, publishers are looking for that, and so are readers. There's so many readers out there that are looking for practical. There's so many books that are missing that. And so I really like that you have that in your book, and I'm sure the readers will love that too.
Well, yeah, I hope that they do. We have the very first chapter in the book is called See Yourself Through the Eyes of Love. And See Yourself Through the Eyes of Love has to do with how self-critical people can be, and it has to do with practically creating a written dialogue between your innermost critic and this person who loves you through their eyes. How would they defend you against the inner critic? And it actually shows you through examples how you would go about creating this written dialogue between your inner critic and with these inflammatory accusations against you, and how this person who loves you would respond to them. And I find that these sorts of techniques can be very powerful in terms of changing the way people view themselves.
Yes, I agree. So how do your colleagues feel about you doing this kind of work? And like I mentioned before, here in Canada, it's very strictly, the medical field is still very strictly scientific. How do they feel about you branching off and doing these, healing and spiritual kind of books and work?
Well, that's a very good question, and I will answer that very happily. As far as my closest colleagues, my two partners, one of my partners is new. She doesn't know too much about the book. The other partner is a man, Matt, who is one of my closest friends, who shares my spiritual inclinations toward life and actually has very similar worldviews as I do, and he's extremely supportive of the book. And I was a little apprehensive about how other doctors would sort of take this in my hospital. And I work at a very large, very progressive, and very excellent community hospital and I know many, many of the physicians that work there. But again, like you said, this is a little off the beaten path. And so while I told a few of them about the book, I didn't really advertise it, and I didn't really want to put it in people's face. And what I found was people started discovering it. I had a gastroenterologist that came to me and said, by the way, I heard you wrote a book. I read the whole thing in one night. I loved it, and I want to talk to you about it. He shared it with his partner, who came to me and said, by the way, my partner read your book, and he told me about it, and I loved your book, and will you autograph it for me? And then the next thing I know, all these gastroenterologists, men, by the way, are reading this book. And it seems like every week I go into the doctor's dining room and more physicians say, hey, I heard you wrote a book, or hey, I read your book and I really, really liked it. And so I have gotten tremendously positive feedback from other physicians, because I think a lot of people are looking for something. And I think it seems to be that this book is resonating with people that I wouldn't even expect it to resonate with, and including physicians at my hospital that I didn't even tell about it.
That's so interesting, because I do find that I live in a very, I guess, conservative community, and it seems to open people up. And, I'm sure you're taken aback by all of the interest from your colleagues and people who you wouldn't suspect that would be interested in that kind of thing. But it really does, they see you doing it, and they see you, being authentic and living what you want to do and doing it your way and not worrying about what society says. And I know you said you were apprehensive at first, but look at you.
Do you know what the hardest part was for me, Michelle?
What?
The hardest part was revealing my personal past to people who are that didn't know. I mean, I've always been very private about ever having had problems with depression or ever having difficulties in that area. It was a real deal for me to open up about that. That's not something that I was very comfortable with. And I did it for one reason, because I had to show, who am I to be writing this book? Why would an obstetrician be writing this book? What sort of credibility do you have? I felt like it was part and parcel with my ability to give credibility to the book. But I did not take kindly to having to open up myself like that and expose myself like that. And I guess, as it turned out, my fears were unfounded because people have been overwhelmingly supportive rather than, I'm hearing more stories of, yeah, I've had that too, than I've never heard any kind of derogatory comment about it.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree. It's, you know, opening yourself up like that, I mean, that's tough, you know, and especially the field that you're in and things like that, you know, it's a tough thing to do, and I commend you for that. I mean, that's, you know, bravery, definitely.
Yeah. So what we fear often doesn't come to pass, isn't that right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So your location, you're in Ohio, is that right?
I'm sorry?
You're in Ohio. Is that where you're located?
I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I'm actually in a suburb called New Albany, Ohio, but the major city that I am living near and working in is Columbus, Ohio, the capital of the state. And that's where I've been for the last 6 years.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I guess, so how do you feel about, you know, the area that you live in terms of spirituality? Is it an open area that way, or are they pretty conservative?
It's a mixture. Ohio is a mixture. If you talk about the areas in the cities, it's pretty progressive in the city areas. The suburbs and the rural areas of Ohio tend to be very conservative places. But interestingly enough, you know, I told you about the physician who read the book that I was surprised that he even read it. He's the most conservative guy probably I know. He's a very, very strong evangelical Christian, and I thought I was going to get all sorts of grief for some of the ideas in the book. But one of the best things he could say to me was the fact that even though he has strong differing views from me religiously, the book was written in such a way that nothing offends anybody, no matter what your religious or political persuasions, because it's written in that way. It's written in a way that the reader can decide for him or herself where to take the ideas. And so I was delighted to hear that this guy, who's very, very politically and religiously conservative, was able to find common ground with me with this book.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's, you know, and that's great. I mean, I think that's why, you know, the book had to be that way. And, you know, you living where you're living and the people that you're surrounded by, you know, it had to be very open. So, yeah, that's amazing. So what's next for you, David? Are you going on a speaking tour, a book signing? What's next for you?
Well, right now, I'm still working as a physician, pretty much full-time. So I've got my hands full with that. I do have a website, www.comforthealingandjoy.com, where I have an active blog, and I take comments from readers, and I take emails that I will respond to. And I use the blog as ways of extending the work that I did in the book and to write about new ideas and new suggestions and new things that pop into my head. So I think blogging is a very key part of this right now. I also have some book publishers that are possibly in the mainstream book publishing industry. That one of them is a very, very big publisher who's currently taking a look at the book, and I'm kind of waiting on that. And I've got a book signing lined up. I was also asked to speak at a conference of women physicians to be their keynote speaker in Colorado regarding women who want more balance in their lives. So I'm going to be, based on the book, I was asked to be a speaker for this conference, the main speaker, and I plan, unbeknownst to the course participants, I plan to give them each a copy of the book.
Wow, that's amazing. So generous, wow. So what about online seminars and things like that, webinars? I mean, that would make a fantastic webinar, doing something like that. I mean, you know, because you're a physician and you can't really, you know, go on a speaking tour, you could do something like that, definitely. I would sign up in a heartbeat.
That would be great.
Well, I just wanted to put that in your hat.
That would be great. I would need some help in how to do that. But, yeah, that would be awesome.
Well, you know, if you do get signed on with a bigger publisher, they're going to expect you to, you know, do things like that. So, you know, I think that people would love to see that. I mean, the book sounds fabulous, and especially with the practical steps, you could turn that into something much more. So what's next for you in terms of the book? Are you going to be doing a part two to the book, or is there another book kind of churning in your head already? Or
the wheels are turning, Michelle, and I don't know where they're going to go yet. As we talked before the show, you know, in a lot of ways, this is kind of out of my hands. It's something that's churning and turning, and I'm just kind of waiting. I don't think it's quite time yet, but I feel some movement happening, but I'm just kind of waiting to see where that goes. But yes, I would like to write again. I enjoy the experience, and I still have this very important purpose in my life, which is to continue to help people in any way that I can. And if I can do that through writing, then that's the way I would like to do it.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think you have a really successful career ahead of you as not only a doctor, but an author as well, because, you know, I think you've struck gold with what you're writing about. And, you know, I'd certainly like to see another book, that's for sure.
Thank you, Michelle.
So I guess I got to throw, no problem. I mean, I just call it like I see it, right? So I guess I got to throw it there to you, just because our show is about being authentic and, you know, living with authenticity. What's your opinion on living with authenticity, and do you feel it's important to live an authentic life?
What do I think is important to live an authentic life? Was that the question?
I said, what's your opinion on living with authenticity, and do you feel it's important to live an authentic life?
Absolutely, positively. I don't know if there's anything more important than that, Michelle. I think we have to listen to our hearts, and we have to make the best decisions we can make, but I think, I mean, authenticity is actually one of my favorite words. I think that's the only way to live.
I agree. You know, and I find that so many people are talking about being authentic and authenticity, and it seems to be the new buzzword. And, you know, your book especially, I mean, Secrets to Living a Magnificent Life. I mean, how could that not include being authentic? So, yeah.
But authenticity doesn't just involve saying it; it involves doing it. So
yes.
we talk our talk, but we also have to walk our walk. And mm-hmm. if I talk about being a great dad, but I'm not behaving like one, then that's not being consistent. And I think actions, as they say, actions speak louder than words. Let's say that actions speak at least as loudly as words. So I think authenticity has not only to do with what we say we're going to do, but actually doing it, and doing it with heart.
Yes, I agree. I see someone in chat has said, someone who's read your book, and they say, this book made me cry right from the first word. So I thought that was really great. Wow.
Who said that?
I'll definitely, someone in the chat had said that.
Oh, yeah.
Someone who had read your book.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely have to get a copy now, for sure.
Well, send me your address and I'll send you a copy.
Please. That would be wonderful. So, you know, David, we were going to take callers, but I have to tell you, I'm a little bit leery about taking callers. I have a few callers in the queue, but I'm noticing a caller that looks eerily familiar to the number that I saw a couple of shows ago, who caused us a little bit of havoc. And it was actually Marlene, who you know from working with your book. She had interviewed me for the pre-show, and we had a caller who caused us a little bit of grief, and he was in the chat room causing some trouble. So I don't think we're going to take callers, but I will take questions in chat. So if anyone has a question, please send it through chat tonight only, because we won't be taking any callers. So we'll just keep chatting, David, and if someone has a question, we'll take that. Oh, we have a question. Okay. What was the hardest chapter to write for you?
Ooh, that's a wonderful question. The hardest chapter to write for me. I would say the chapter on giving yourself approval. Because I would say that that has probably been one of my own biggest personal challenges. And so that was probably the hardest chapter for me to write personally.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Giving yourself approval, what does that mean exactly in your words?
Well, you know, it's important for us to, we all want to love and to be loved, but it's important for us sometimes to pat ourselves on the back, to let us ourselves know that we've done a good job, and to feel good about ourselves in general. And unfortunately, as the case may be, I'm one of those people that's kind of hard on myself. I have very high standards for myself and have these perfectionistic tendencies. And I would say that I'm very capable of giving myself approval and feeling good about myself. It's just that, you know, when you have very high standards for yourself, you know, it makes it harder because you tend to expect so much more in order to be satisfied. And I would say that's been a personal challenge for me. And I would say that made it harder for me to write that chapter.
Me too. You know, I can agree and I can relate with that so much because I'm still that way, you know, very hard on myself, very self-critical, self-doubting, and just, you know, beat myself up all the time for not being perfect. And, you know, the more you talk about the book, the more I realize it sounds like it was written just for me. Wow.
My offer stands.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I guess we've gone through all the questions that I have for you. We'll just kind of free chat for the next 10 minutes if you'd like. I mean, we can go through that website again. It's comforthealingandjoy.com. So anyone listening, they can look on that site to find out a little bit more about you, David, and also about your book. And can they purchase your book through your website, or can they go to Amazon?
They can purchase the book through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. If you go to the website, there's a Buy the Book link that'll take you directly to Amazon. It's also available on Kindle for people who have e-readers. And so there are lots of ways to get the book.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely am going to take you up on that offer because it sounds like it's the next book for me to read. I mean, I'm really at this kind of pivotal point where I'm, you know, sitting on the fence with where I want to go next. So, yeah, it sounds like a fabulous book. And I'm definitely going to keep in touch with you and encourage you to get out there and start speaking because I think that you have a really great speaking presence, and I think you would do fantastic if you could kind of, you know, find some time to branch out there and start speaking more because I think you really need to spread the word more than just selling the book.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And I'm definitely on the lookout for opportunities like that.
There's another question in chat. Would he recommend self-publishing a book? So would you recommend that? I'm actually debating on that myself.
Do I recommend self-publishing a book?
Yes.
Well, I think that's an important question. I don't know if there's a one-size-fits-all answer for everybody. I suppose it depends on what your budget is, and I suppose it depends on what your goals are. There are ways of self-publishing a book that are relatively inexpensive. It depends on whether you have a large interest in book sales. If you want to get your book in print, you can do it rather inexpensively by self-publishing, and you don't have to go through all the rigmarole of getting an agent and getting a publisher and all that. If you want to sell lots of copies of your book, then the focus really needs to be on marketing. And so not only do you have to get it published, but you have to probably have help with marketing, and it can be a very, very expensive proposition. I have a beautiful, beautiful cover that I was intimately involved in the design of. I had expert editing and expert publishing and expert marketing of the book and expert website creation. And it cost me a lot of money to do that. And if you have the resources to do it, wonderful. If you don't have the resources to do it, then you've either got to go the low-budget route, which is can range from several hundred dollars to several thousand dollars, or you can go for mainstream publishing. With mainstream publishing, you're talking about sending dozens and dozens and dozens of query letters to agents asking them to represent you. And if you find an agent that represents you, then they have to you have to hope that they'll shop your book to a publisher. And if they do that, you have to hope that a publisher will accept you. And if you do that, you have to hope that the publisher will market you. So if everything works out great in mainstream publishing, then you might be able to get your book in bookstores within a couple of years. The thing is that publishers right now are very, very risk averse and really very averse to taking on authors that are either unproven or unknown. So you could have the best book or the best idea, but if they don't know who you are and they don't, and you've never written anything before that's been published, statistically, the odds are stacked way, way against you. It doesn't mean it's impossible. And so what I've chosen to do is to self-publish and prove my book so that I can get through mainstream publishing, but I did not have the desire. I wanted to get my book into people's hands to read and to help them as soon as possible. And the fastest way for me to do that was to spend my own money getting it done rather than wait and wait and wait and wait and play a game that I did not want to play for 2 years.
Yes. And, you know, there's a lot of people who think that self-publishing is, I guess, you know, the low end of the scale or the one that, you know, doesn't give you as much credit or credibility and all of that. But I disagree. You know, I agree with you saying that you need to get your message out. And if it's, if it's a great book, publishers are going to want you. And that seems to be the case with you, that the publishers have, you know, you've caught their eye. So
when you talk about authenticity, and if the goal of your book is to help people, then you'll find the best way to do that.
Yes.
If the goal of your book is to get into people's hands to help them enjoy their lives more, then you won't worry about all these other things. You just do what you can to get it into people's hands. And that's why I chose the route that I chose, but I can't say that that's the best route for somebody else to choose.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it just depends on the situation. I noticed also on your website that you have Michael, is it Beckwith? Yes, Michael Beckwith as, yeah, and he's endorsed your book. How did that come about?
Well, there was a very short list of people that I was interested in endorsing my book, and I wrote to Michael Beckwith, and he very enthusiastically wanted to support and endorse the book, give a testimonial, and I was delighted to hear that. He's a very big seller of books. He's a best-selling author. He's got a tremendous reputation for Agape Center that he runs, and I was just absolutely honored and flattered that he was supportive of the book, and so that's how that came about. I simply wrote him on my own.
Yeah,
and I sent him the manuscript.
Yeah, the synchronicity of it all, eh? It's just amazing how it all came about and how it all just fell together. I mean, I don't know if you mentioned this on air, but you mentioned this to me before we started the show, that you wrote the book in 4 months.
Yes, I wrote the book in about 4 months. And as I said, the book kind of wrote itself. I felt like something was just passing through me, and I was just sort of the instrument to put it onto, I guess we don't say onto paper anymore. I was just sort of the vehicle for getting this out. I really felt some type of, I don't know if it was divine inspiration or where it came from, but it did not all come from me. And but
yeah,
such is the way with creativity, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's such an amazing story. You know, I think you're well on your way to quite a career, let's just say that. You know, I can feel it in my bones that this is going to be bigger than you ever thought it could be. I think it's going to really take off. And, you know, the second book and the third book, I think there's going to be more. And I think that you're going to have to really branch out. So, yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see where you're going with all of this.
Thank you, Michelle.
Well, thank you so much, David. It was a pleasure to have you on the show. And once again, I want to let everyone know that you can find out more about David and his book, Comfort, Healing, and Joy, Secrets to Manifesting a Magnificent Life, at comforthealingandjoy.com. So you can take a look at his book and read more about this amazing man. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, guys. Now, next week, next week we've got special guest Ina Segal. Now, she's the author of The Secret Language of Your Body. Ina is the creator of Visionary Intuitive Healing, and is an internationally recognized healer, professional speaker, author, and television host. Ina's product range includes over 30 audio programs. And on a wide range of topics as diverse as wellness, pain relief, happiness, confidence, weight loss, and prosperity. Ina is a gifted healer and a pioneer in the field of energy medicine and human consciousness. She can see illnesses and blocks in a person's body by intuitive means and can explain what is occurring and guide people through self-healing processes. I think we're going to learn a lot from this lady, and I'm sure that Ina will be up for some on-air readings. So, I think it's going to be a great show next week, and I can't wait to see what she's all about. So thank you so much for listening, and please do tune in next week for another great episode of Authentic You Radio.